This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Come on, stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
It is What's Your Beef Wednesday, and we're going to be giving our beefs in the 8 o'clock hour this morning. Of course, if you want to give us your beefs, call in 877-377-6960 or tweet us at Hit That Line AR. I wanted to bring up this deal with Chad Morris, and it was a really good article that was put up on Bleacher Report about Chad Morris and about just his where he's at as far as his offensive mind, where he came into Arkansas. You know the resume, you know what type of coach that he's trying to be, what type of strategy and philosophy he's trying to instill into the Razorback football program. And it's about the jump that is going to be made offensively from his first year to his second year. It's not saying it's going to define who he is, but it's going to show just how good of an offensive mind Chad Morris really is by how big of a jump this team makes offensively this upcoming season. Because if you look at the roster up and down from what it was a year ago to now, it is pretty much completely different. I mean, you couldn't see, you got a different quarterback. The running backs are pretty much the same, so that's probably the one position where you're the same at. The wide receivers are completely different. The offensive linemen are completely different. Even the tight ends, you still have Shion O'Grady, but you're going to be adding guys into the mix like a Hudson Henry also. And of course, Chase Harrell is also another player that moved to tight end from wide receiver. So even that crew is going to look fairly different from what it did just a year ago. So what it looks like to me as far as what Chad Morris was able to do is not only go out and recruit some guys like some of these wide receivers and a tight end like Hudson Henry, but also be able to go out and get some transfers in like that the quarterback situation, because he understands the importance of it and how it's going to be pivotal in making that next jump in this upcoming season. So you can't say that he has his full squad and all of his players in, but he certainly did what he needed to do to make sure that he got at least started on the right path instead of working with what was here before. He's trying to mold it right now and do a quick fix on what he's trying to do with the offense in general.
I tell you, as important maybe as getting the guys in, he's gotten some guys out that weren't buying into the culture, weren't both feet in the circle guys. You know, it's been a pretty good purge of the roster, and about a third overhaul, roughly, of totally new players coming in. That's a big change. I've always thought it's going to take a couple of recruiting classes, and I didn't count the first one. I mean, it was a horrible time to be changing coaches as far as the first year you're introducing the early signing period. Really putting behind the eight balls. You can't hardly count that deal right there. So, absolutely. You know, question is, how many of these true freshmen coming in, how many of the true freshmen that are on campus now that you had a handful that came in December and enrolled early are going to make real contributions this year? Because you're going to need some of that. That was, you know, for what little bit of success Bielema had, he had some players like a Dan Skipper and he had some others that contributed very early on from their arrival on campus. There's going to need to be some of these players that step up and become the players right away. You need them to be early on. They're going to make mistakes, but that's going to be key and crucial, I think, to the development for really what has to be a breakout third year.
Well, if you even look at guys that you mentioned, how early guys or young guys had to come in and step in right away, and I know it's just a spring game, but you saw a little glimpse of somebody like a Trey Knox and the playmaking ability that he could have when he has the ball in his hands. And the fact of the matter is, I know that it's just one play and it's a spring game, so you got to take it with a grain of salt as far as translating it into the SEC season this upcoming year. But when you see something like that, you're like, that they didn't have anybody like that last year. Anybody that could even get close to doing that last year. And that's one player. You got 10 other guys that are important on the offense, but that one player can make that big of a difference, though.
And I'm very interested to see how this new rule with the four games that you can play in four games and still retain your redshirt status. Those players that did that last year, how does that accelerate their development for this season? No way it can't help, right?
Right.
To have that kind of experience. So, and you know, what we're talking about, which players are under no consideration of the four-game deal? They're going to blow way past that, you know.
Yeah.
At that point, you might as well play them in all the games if you can. If you can get away with it.
Yeah, might as well. I mean, because it's about getting the best guys in the position to play. And, you know, a guy like Trey Knox.
But getting real experience.
But, yeah, getting real experience. But a guy like Trey Knox, you know, if you saw what he's able and capable of doing as a true freshman, you know, inexperience or whatever, be damned. You throw him in there because he's the best player right there.
And that's at a position, wide receiver's one that you can help right away. Yeah.
And again, I don't want to just, you know, always be crapping on Brett Bielema, but that was one of the things, though, that you, at least I, got frustrated by, is it seemed like he was so adamant about not giving freshmen or not giving talented freshmen a certain amount of playing time or not putting them in position because they're freshmen. You know, now, they got to earn it. They got to build it up.
In fairness, he didn't have the four-game rule either.
That's true, and I agree with you there. But to me, the game of football, and this you use this in basketball and everything, but especially the game of football, it's not what it used to be where you have to have a player that comes in as a freshman. You got to wait a couple years before
you got to earn your way.
Yeah, you got to earn your way on the field, and then you have to have that experience. You have to have your body built up, because I'm not saying every freshman is this way, but you have seen such a transition to where more and more true freshmen, 18, 19-year-old kids, are more ready to play college football at that age than they were 10, 15, 20 years ago.
It's amazing. You know, not all of them, but physically how prepared they come in now.
Yeah. And so if you have the talent there, if you have a true freshman, and again, I'm using the example of Trey Knox because that was kind of the true freshman, I don't want to say a phenom, but he was a highly recruited player,
right,
a guy that came in and he looks physically ready, and he's a wide receiver, which Arkansas needs a lot of help with. Taking that into consideration and seeing that, hey, if he can play, put him on the field, and it makes the difference. I don't care about what class they are. That should not matter. If they are the best player, the most talented player at that position, you play them, regardless of any of the factors
that
go into.
Who can help you win games?
That's right.
Today.
Because that's what it's about. It's about winning right now. And that's where it's like with Chad Morris, because it comes back to him being an offensive mind, an offensive guru of what he's been his whole career. That's what you're at least, you can't say respecting just yet because you don't know how it's going to turn out. But you can at least have some sort of hope towards it, because he went out and he understood that what happened last season cannot happen again, ever. I wonder if that was the most tough, frustrating, embarrassing season Chad Morris has ever had in his coaching career. I know he had a one-two win season at SMU. I think it was the one or two, but it wasn't that many. And I would be curious to know if the Arkansas season his first year was worse than that, just as far as his frustration and what he was having to put. What he's having to deal with, what he was having to adjust to, and what he was having to learn. He'll never say it or admit it, but it had to be tough on him. But he understands that what he had last year can't happen again, and he has to win right now. And he has to do whatever it takes to win right now, and he has to get the players in that'll help him win right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so by him going out and getting Ben Hicks and Nick Starkle, we don't know who's going to start. I would just go ahead and go on a limb and say it's probably going to be Ben Hicks, at least game one. He's comfortable with that. He went out and he recruited a great freshman class, and one of the best recruiting classes Arkansas has had in quite some time. Addressed a lot of needs. Still have to work on the offensive line. We'll see how that goes. But got a lot of skill position guys to really be able to help him win. Now, defensively, look at the defensive linemen they were able to get last year. I mean, some big-time defensive linemen. How long is it going to transition for them? How long is it going to take for them to feel like maybe they come in as true freshmen and be able to attribute right away? So all these factors going into it, and seeing how Chad Morris handled it from last year to this year, I think is what can give Razorback fans some hope of how it can take that next step. It can make a big jump offensively because he has better players to make that happen. Yeah. It's just about having the Jimmys and Joes.
It's always about that. It's always about play. You know, and again, I'm very interested in a couple things. Can you win at least five this year? I think they can win six or seven, but can you win at least five? And can you, more importantly, can you equal or match or follow up consistently in recruiting with what you accomplished this year? Which, let's not get carried away with, they didn't win the league in recruiting, but they made a huge jump by Arkansas standards in recruiting this year. Still was, you know, ninth in the league and towards the bottom of the division and nationally. But nationally was better. I just believe the quality of player they got in here better. It's just how tough the league is when it comes to recruiting. But can you follow that up? So we're not asking, hey, we need you to win the West in recruiting.
No.
You know, but can you somehow maintain or grow the number of four-star players you're getting in here? And that's really the big jump Arkansas took, was how many four-stars that Chad Morris was able to land in comparison to previous times. It's just amazing, though, that the better you do, it seems like the better everyone else in this league does.
Yeah, that's right. And I know it's all speculative as far as what Chad Morris could do this year. But say if he wins at least five, say if he just makes six, goes six games, goes to a bowl game, and then he has and follows it up with a recruiting class next year that was just as good as this past year, yeah, or even better. That's called momentum. That's called building, and that's called excitement for Razorback fans.
Yeah,
because you're going in the right direction. You're doing the right things. So
that it's going to take a couple of three classes to get that there. I mean,
but you're on the right track.
What, you can't have just one class.
No,
to build this program. So no, this is absolutely crucial this year. That's as crucial as the winning five or six games. So I'm very interested to see, as we talk to Richard. We'll talk to Richard Davenport tomorrow. The growth of the 2020 class. They're already working on 2021 athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, so they just seem to be more organized. And I don't know if it's the social media. I don't know if it's because of the coverage of recruiting compared to previous coaching eras. It just seems like for whatever reason, there's more interest and there's more sense of urgency, and there's just more effort being put into recruiting right now. And I don't know if that's accurate, but that just is the feel around it right now.
Perception.
This coach is more worried about recruiting than he really is anything, and that's a good thing.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Ty just almost died there as Officer Breeden just walked in. And he was not expecting.
Yeah. He must have heard us talking about his brother in a minute ago.
I guess so. My goodness, Ty, you all right?
Yeah, I'm good. When y'all were looking, I was thinking y'all were looking at the comments, and I did not expect him to be here.
No, he's in.
What's up, sir?
Breeden has snuck into the studio.
Yeah, graced us with his presence here, and he comes rolling in.
It still won't be as bad as the first week I was here, and I was doing stuff in the prod room, and John wasn't here yet, and he walked in. Yeah. And I was freaking out.
Yeah. Well, he is an intimidating presence. So, yeah. So Officer Breeden, come over here. And what did we deserve your great presence here this morning?
Well, first of all, it's wet out there. Everybody, be careful driving.
Yeah, yes, wet everywhere this morning.
It's wet everywhere. Hydroplane. We've already seen a couple cases of that. So, everybody, be careful while they're driving.
All right.
And I heard a rumor.
Uh oh.
I heard a rumor that there's a individual on this staff that believes his physical condition is probably better than anyone else's just based on his age.
Yeah. Ah, yes, yeah. Yes. That would be...
If that is a fact, I challenge him...
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
...to powerlifting?
I don't think he's much of a powerlifter.
Okay.
Or a lifter.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's nice and wet, so the ground's soft. We can just go outside and scuffle a little bit. What do you think, young man? You know, you got to be careful because
Ty was popping off at the mouth. For those that may not know the backstory here, Ty was popping off at the mouth last week about how he guarantees
that he is in much better shape
because of his youthfulness
than me or Tommy. Yes.
Let's clear that up. Over them two. Okay. Not you. Over them two.
Well, I'm older than both of them.
And more in shape.
Remember, old age and tenacity will be the victor.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Can't wait to look forward to that when I get older then. So, well, yeah, but we got to set up something.
Did you hear this call a minute ago?
Yeah, we're going to ask you about that.
Negative, I did not.
Okay. Well, we had an individual call since What's Your Beef Wednesday. It was Matthew in Brockwell. He called in and said he was beefing with a police officer that was driving in his police cruiser, and it was on the highway, and he didn't have his lights on or anything, but he was driving extremely fast, over the speed limit, riding everybody's butt, getting up on their car and then passing them very quickly and then getting on another person's butt and going on, just going really fast, and didn't feel like he was obeying the own laws that are set by this government to be able to follow his own laws. So he was really upset by it. And since you're here, we wanted to ask, is there any explanation to that? Or because I know everybody's different when it comes to police officers.
Absolutely. There are times that we get a call that is a an emergency call, but we do not want to operate with lights and sirens because it alerts the person we are on the way. For instance, as unfortunate as it is, the domestic disturbance calls. You don't want to go in there with lights and sirens because now you've alerted everyone. And if the person's already excited or more than excited, more than they should be, it just really exacerbates the situation. So you try to de-escalate by approaching quickly, but not with lights and sirens.
Okay. See, Matthew and Rockwell, if you're still listening, there's your explanation.
Is there anything Ty could beat you at physically? Push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, chin-ups?
He could probably beat me at the 40-yard dash.
Okay.
He probably could. But since the ground's nice and soft, we can go outside and scuffle a little bit.
I think a wrestling match would be good.
Yeah. Okay. He's tapping out already.
Yeah.
He's already given up on that fact. So that's
all hat, no cattle.
Yeah.
All talk.
Waving his white flag over there. So. But okay. Well, my money would probably be on Officer Breed in most cases.
All my money would be.
Maybe even in the 40-yard dash.
Maybe even in 40.
It's like I've told people, I'm not a tough guy. I know some tough guys. I'm not one of them, but I just hate to back down from any contest.
Jeez, officer.
Especially with a millennial.
Well, if you're not tough, I'd hate to see what the people you know look like tough, because I feel like you're a pretty tough guy.
No, I'm not a tough guy. I know some tough guys. I'm just average.
Jeez. Man, I guess I got to get new friends.
I'm just trying to be average.
just trying to be average on this show. So, I'm glad you stay dry out there. Yeah, stay dry and everyone stay safe out there.
We'll do that. Thank you very much. And Ty, I don't know that you could really keep up with Tommy day in and day out.
Oh man,
thank you for saying that.
Maybe you can throw a football 60 yards.
Maybe.
But you still have to have someone there to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all have a great day.
Appreciate it, Officer Breeden. Appreciate it. Now, someone there to catch or someone there to officiate it.
Yeah.
Because that's what Tommy does. So there you have it.
That's a good detour right there.
And that's right. I was sitting in there. We were going to dive into Aaron Musselman's comments, and I'm glad Officer Breeden came in to be able to explain some of the things that have been going on there. And look at that. You got some food, Tommy?
Oh, and he's got me a good low-carb breakfast here, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, no. Big old omelet here.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much. Low-carb, everything. Man, this is great. What a treat. What a treat. Thank you.
Some breakfast.
Low-carb, huh? So
good to see you.
I guess he knows that you're on your diet then, right?
Yeah. You can have the toast.
I don't want the toast. I wanted the omelet.
There's another one over there.
Oh. Okay, I was about to say, you don't want to split one with you. I mean, that's all yours. Okay, so now we're all good then. We all made it happen. So.
All right.
Now, that was a detour of detours.
That was a detour.
I don't even know where.
That was a U-turn.
Yeah. But you know what? We needed that in there, though.
Yeah, I am going with John to CrossFit tomorrow, so we're going to see how that goes.
Yeah, I think you were just invited to CrossFit in the front yard.
Yeah, it's a little different version of CrossFit.
I think you were just invited to go to CrossFit, like, immediately.
I know you never want to get facts in the way of a good story, but the story that I told was that I could beat you in a fitness competition and John in a fitness. It had nothing to do with anyone else outside of this room.
Mm-hmm. Well, we understand that. But that was what we were saying, is that Officer Breeden was like,
the point where you made...
It was about age.
All of us old guys unhappy with you is when you said it was all about age. It was only about age.
It's not all about age, but that's a big factor.
Do we need to pull the tape?
No, I mean, it's...
So, basically, when you say it's all about age, I mean, what's the difference in my age and Officer Breeden being older than you? I mean, age is age,
he defies age.
Okay.
Boy, you're backpedaling.
He's the ageless man.
He's the...
You look like it.
He's the anomaly in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't...
Backpedal.
Yeah. Well, we need to have some sort of...
politician in here.
We need to have some sort of physical competition here on the Morning Rush that can settle it all. Settle all the marbles. For all the marbles there. So there you have it. Well, appreciate Officer Breeden coming in and talking a little trash to Ty Richardson.
Ty coming,
coming in guns blazing.
Ty was waving the white flag pretty quick there.
On the wrestling, I would too. I'd be right with him. I think even all three of us could try. It'd be a 3-on-1 match, and we'd still lose that one against Officer Breeden.
A good man knows what he's doing.
He's got one. He's got, we could have all the weapons and it wouldn't matter.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer, with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays,
fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
Eric Musselman, the new Razorback head basketball coach, who was on Andy Katz's podcast, and he was asking him just some basic questions just about what the future holds, how everything's going to play out. And the one thing that he brought up that I thought was fascinating when he talks about the current roster that Arkansas has and some of the pieces that they're going to try to accomplish or try to add into moving forward, here's what he had to say.
Coach Anderson did an incredibly great job here. I mean, his team's always played hard. They have a national reputation of really getting after it. But we have a lot of pieces that are back. They were a really, really young team, a lot of freshmen and sophomores. And so we do have guys that gained experience, and you hope younger players make a big leap. We do not have a five-man, and we might not be able to have a five-man. So we might have to do what we did at Nevada for 3 years, which is play guys that are small forwards or power forwards, play them at that five spot.
So that was basically a response to any of you who have asked the question, because I know I have, about the replacement of Daniel Gafford. Where's the size going to come from? Where Eric Musselman's throwing it out there and saying, hey, listen, we may not be able to have a true five down there down low. We may not be able to go any bigger than 6'8". We may just have to do what, like I did in Nevada, where I'm rolling with threes and fours and just trying to work with what I got in the system that I have in place too. But not only does he mention that, but he also mentions that in the current roster that he has, he's really excited and really happy with the talent that's there and how hard these guys would play and where they're at with their mental toughness as well. So when you hear these positive things, you hear, and you could chalk it up to coach speak, we'll find out, but you know, those types of comments, though, really makes it to where people can get excited about this upcoming season, because someone like Eric Musselman, who's been around a lot of great players, who has coached a lot of great players, who has been at every single division and every single league when it comes to coaching basketball, if he's high on the current roster that he has right now, I think that adds into the mix, not in a bad way, but adds into the mix of expectations coming up this upcoming basketball season.
Now, you know, as you watch college basketball and you watch the tourney, not every team has a true five,
right,
and a big guy, but it seems like all the teams that get to the Final Four do. I mean, more often than not. I mean,
yeah.
But like 8 out of 10. I mean, you look over a 2 or 3 year period, more of them seem to have at least some kind of
6'9"
posing
bigger
inside presence.
Yeah.
Whether you want to qualify them as a true five or a big four or whatever, most of those teams do have someone that's going to clean the glass, patrol the paint. And generally teams that are constructed like Auburn, as you brought up this year, don't generally make it. And Auburn wasn't a team that you were saying, there's a Final Four team. They just got hot at the right time, which proves, hey, this sport, like baseball that we're talking about here in season right now, it's about peaking at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn peaked at the right time and slayed Goliaths on their way to the Final Four.
And if it went for
you can have a really good basketball team and do a lot of great things without a true five, but it seems like more often than not, most of these teams that do get to the final weekend have that complete team with that true five.
Well,
or at least someone that fits that mold for their team.
Well, what is, at least from the Razorback perspective, and I think that size equates a few things when they just see, oh, if somebody has a 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", 7, whatever it is, just a big man, it equates to certain things. And one of the things that he equates is to rebounding, at least in people's minds. Not saying that they're always great at it, but that's the one thing that we've talked about that Arkansas as a team and as a program really has not seemed like they've been good at for decades is rebounding.
I mean, you wouldn't say Bobby Portis was a five, but he kind of played that spot particularly from a rebounding role for Arkansas, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's more of a four.
Moses Kingsley was as close as you had to a five.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Daniel Gafford was your guy that was your five. Those are three pretty good inside players.
Yeah.
You know, and Arkansas still with that kind of talent didn't get to the Sweet 16. So, you know.
And they weren't good rebounding teams.
I'm willing to try it some other way.
Yeah.
You know, because clearly the answer is not just having a, because Portis is an NBA player. We know that, you know, Daniel Gafford's going to be. Kingsley got a look, but he's played professional basketball elsewhere.
But he's a really good college basketball player.
But he's a really good college basketball player. And that didn't equate just because you had a great five. And like I said, you could argue whether those were true fives, but they were fives for Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't equate to a Sweet 16 either. It's about improving guard play. It's about improving defense out top. It's about a lot of other things other than, well, you got to have a five.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a lot more than that.
So,
and because it's also about what you're able to do as a coach with those players that you have, how you're able to utilize their strengths and create it into something that makes your team successful. And that's something that I'm curious to see how Eric Musselman's going to do with just these current roster guys, because we've already seen how a lot of these guys have played. I mean, Isaiah Joe was phenomenal. I mean, the guy is a sharpshooter. I mean, he broke the records for pretty much every three-point shooting record you could have as a freshman, and he broke it this year. And you're hoping that he can only continue to get better. And guys like Mason Jones, you saw a lot of upside in him. A guy like Reggie Chaney, you'd really excite. So, I mean, you've seen some of these guys that have been that shown promise and have shown potential. I am curious of what Eric Musselman is going to do with that. What can he turn these guys into? What can he turn Isaiah Joe into? Because we know he's a great sharpshooter, but can he be more than that? Mason Jones is a guy that can play the three or the four, or a two or a three at least. Can he turn him into somebody greater? Can he turn him into somebody who locks down defensively? Can he turn Reggie Chaney into a rebound? I mean, you know, like, these are the things that I'm hoping and that I'm going to be curious about, because with Mike Anderson for 8 years, and this wasn't a slight against Mike Anderson, but it's just how he was as a coach. But for 8 years, you kind of knew what you were getting with all these players. You knew what you were going to get with Bobby Portis. You knew what you were going to get with Daniel Gafford the next year, after a year of development. You knew what type of player they were. There'd be some things they would develop. For instance, I think when they had Bobby Portis, that they developed him more into a shooter. He was able to have his outside game improved in his second year. So there are a few moments here and there, but it's going to be about what other things can you do? What are other elements to these players' games can you add to make your team better? Because right, that right there might be in the wheelhouse of Eric Musselman of developing these guys. Mm-hmm. So what other talents can he make them develop? And I think there could be a big jump. I mean, could we see a guy like Isaiah Joe be more than just a shooter this year? Can he be a penetrator?
Yeah. What can he do with his current roster?
Yeah.
But what can he do to just energize the perception around the program? This is a place you want to come play. And more importantly, can he demonstrate, and this will just take some time, can he demonstrate that, hey, this is a place you can go and improve and to get developed and go to the NBA, get drafted, get paid? Because that was really one of the hard knocks on the previous coaching staff with Mike, is they didn't have a great track record about getting players in the draft.
And that's the end game for all these players.
All of these elite players, that's the only thing that, yeah, when you're going through the process, that it seems like, you know, that's not just the top priorities, maybe the only priority.
Yeah, because that's when they're looking at schools. That's what they look at.
If Arkansas is going to get those kind of players, you're going to have to demonstrate, mm-hmm, yes, this coaching staff headed by Eric Musselman and this university, this program, this conference, the whole thing is set up for success for you professionally.
Yeah, and we're not talking about, at least I'm not talking about, just one-and-done type players, because those are the players that, you know, they're going to go to the Dukes and the Kansases and the Kentuckys. And it's not saying that Arkansas can't get any of those players, but that's not what we're referring to. We're referring to those kind of that next tier of players, that
2 to 3 year players.
Yeah. That are still good enough to make it into the NBA, but they just need a couple of tweaks, a couple of years, and they're in it.
Like it or not, you really don't. I mean, as much as you think you want 4 year players, you really don't want 4 year players anymore.
No, it's not the way that the game goes. It's not the way the game's played.
I mean, I'm not saying you can't win, but I mean, these teams that are winning and getting to the Final Four, the Elite Eights, they're not chock full of a lot of seniors.
No.
Now, it's amazing, though, teams with experience, teams with juniors, teams with a lot of experienced sophomores have a lot of success. I don't think you can win with all freshmen either. There's some kind of balance in there.
Yeah. Because, I mean, for crying out loud, Arkansas basketball had, what was it, 2 years ago, they had like 7 seniors.
Yeah.
And they were, and a few of them were really good seniors and lost in the first round. So, you know, like you said, you have to have a balance. You have to be able to have the talent and experience, because you can't do it with all freshmen. You just can't do it that way. But just because you have all seniors doesn't equate either. You got to be able to have a balance. You got to be able just to get talented guys in.
You got to elevate the talent coming into the program.
Yes.
Elevate the level of talent you're bringing in.
And develop. That's the thing that I think Eric Musselman is going to have to do, and at least show, because some of these guys, there's potential to work with there.
You've got his NBA background.
Yeah.
He's building a staff with some guys that, you know, look at Corey Williams and some guys that they're putting together. And I'll be interested when they finally release, hey, here are all the members of the coaching staff. I think there's some guys clearly that are there that are going to be a part of this. But, you know, you're going to be able to make a good case to a player, to a prospect, to mom and dad that we know what we're doing when it comes to playing in the NBA. And here's why. Look at these. Mm-hmm. Look at our track record. Look at the resume. But then you're going to have to demonstrate you can make it work and take a player through the process and get them there.
Now, I know that this is a small thing, and I know that it's probably done with a purpose, but when that video came out that the university released of the practice that Eric Musselman was going through.
The Golden State deal?
Yeah, well, the comment he made was, these are the drills that teams in the NBA. This is the Golden State drill. They run this at the very beginning of every practice.
Right. That sounds great to us. We weren't really the target for that comment.
We weren't.
That wasn't aimed at us. And now, as fans, as people that are take a lot of pride in the Razorbacks, we eat that up with a spoon. I mean, that's red meat, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh man. Oh, I mean that just gets you going. But that particular snippet out of that video was aimed at recruits.
Yep.
That was a recruiting statement.
Yep.
Right there.
Because they see Golden State, they see the standard, they see the greatness, they see the NBA.
Mm-hmm. They see dollar bills.
And that's exactly right. They see paid. And then when they see that, that's what they want in a school. And if you have someone like Eric Musselman who has that experience and is able to sell that to the recruits, you're going to have a good situation, a great situation for Razorback basketball in the coming years.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
How does Eric Musselman feel about scheduling, particularly when it comes to non-conference opponents?
You got to try to win as many games you can in non-conference, but you still want to challenge yourself because, you know, when you really study that tournament, there's just an enormous amount of Power Five. It's the argument, you know, a program that is middle of the road record-wise in really, really tough conferences against those mid-majors like in Nevada, who gets in. And I think it can be one non-conference game can turn the needle one way or the other to get you into the NCAA tournament.
It's always about the RPI and strength of schedule when it comes to how a team is going to perform and how they can be given the benefit of the doubt, or a team that's going to be put in front of another team as far as in the NCAA tournament goes. But a non-conference slate, you could even make the argument that Arkansas has done a fairly good job of having some decent non-conference games and how important it is to get you ready for the SEC slate. But it becomes a balance of, okay, do you want to schedule games that'll have you win more games, or do you want to schedule games more so to have you better prepared for conference play and better prepared for tournament play by playing some of those tough teams?
And it's a game of metrics, too, with the RPI, strength of schedule, net ratings now being one of the key components of what the committee is looking at. So it's a balance. And then, you know, the SEC has gotten heavily involved in scheduling because the league was terrible for years about not scheduling much at all in the non-conference portion of the schedules. And then that's why you struggled to get teams in to the field. So the league has a heavy hand and a lot of input into how you're scheduling. And I don't see a lot of options to schedule much differently, you know, leading up to conference play.
See, I don't either. And because I think that Arkansas and under Mike Anderson, they did a good job of having a good schedule. I mean, even last year, you had a game against Texas. You had a game against Indiana. You had games against teams that were, at least at that time, looking at possibly making it into the NCAA tournament and possibly being able to at least make it into postseason play in some capacity. So if you schedule teams like that, it's only going to benefit you. And I think that that's something that I wanted Arkansas to do for quite some time, because I'm going to be honest, folks, I don't know exactly what goes into scheduling as far as, you know, what teams do you contact to see if they're interested in scheduling a home and home. I don't know exactly what challenges are going to be in the mix. I know that Arkansas and the SEC are part of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. I'm sure that's going to continue on. We'll see who Arkansas actually gets to play, because last year they played Texas Tech, the team that played in the national championship game and only lost by 3. So who really knows who's going to be Arkansas's opponent next year. But I'd like to see, and again, I don't know how it's done, but I'd like to see Arkansas find ways to schedule more home-and-home games with really interesting opponents. I understand that you can't exactly just go up to Duke and say, hey, Duke, we're Arkansas. We'd like to play you in a home and home. Like, that's not going to happen.
They're scared of us.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. They're
scared
of Arkansas.
They don't want any.
They don't want any part of that.
Remember 94. We don't want any more of that.
Scared of Bud Walton Arena. But you can't do that anymore. But, I mean, I'd like to see them try to reach out and try to have more quality opponents or at least name opponents that not only would be able to benefit them in the RPI and benefit the non-conference slate as far as the difficulty of it all, but I'd like to see it just for the fans' perspective. I mean, how cool, like, you remember those games, like, how cool was it to have Michigan come to Bud Walton Arena that time?
That was great.
It was awesome. Syracuse I know
was another one.
Yeah, I know it was part of that challenge, but still, those types of teams, I mean, they drew a huge crowd. Arkansas weren't good those years. Those are 2 years they didn't even make postseason play. But it was the name on the jersey of the team that was coming in and the coach that they may have had for them that really drew the crowd. So those are the type, like, again, I'm not saying that Duke or North Carolina or Kansas is going to schedule, but who knows? Maybe can you get another team? Can you get like Virginia? Would Virginia be interested in playing you? Somebody like that.
You also got to remember you have the SEC Big 12 challenge built in. So, you know,
I'd like to see one more team though. Besides that, because you had Indiana and Texas this past season. They weren't part of the SEC Big 12 challenge. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that measuring those teams, but I'd like to see somebody like that.
So, do you go out west? Do you keep playing people in your region? I think it's important to play teams in Texas and in your region as much as you can. I think Memphis would be a great home and home.
That's the one that we're all hoping for.
But I don't think that's, you know, anytime soon. So, I mean, those are the kind of teams regionally, I think from a recruiting standpoint, you'd like to have on your schedule.
Yeah, and it's also about just, you know, having, you mentioned regional teams.
I know you're going to rotate around in the Big 12, but even having Oklahoma or Oklahoma State, and they've played Oklahoma State in that Big 12 challenge, haven't played Oklahoma, you're never going to play Kansas because that's always going to be Kentucky's opponent. But you can play Kansas State. Yeah. You know,
I mean, Texas Tech is another. Played them, but
how
good
would it be for both fan bases if and they don't always go home and home. Sometimes they do in this thing that if you played Kansas State, drivable. Oklahoma State, we've seen that.
Yeah.
Drivable. Mm-hmm. OU, drivable. You know, Texas Tech, Lubbock, not exactly good for fans either direction.
Yeah, and I know that the SEC and the AAC have a deal in place to where they're going to start playing each other kind of in a similar way.
Four teams from each conference.
The teams that aren't in the Big 12 challenge are going to be part of that.
Yeah, so if Arkansas ever does not get a part
of a rotation
the Big 12 challenge, so maybe there'd be the way that you could play Memphis, but, you know.
Maybe Houston's another program you could.
Yeah, Houston's another great one.
Because that's regionally, geographically, somewhere where you'd like to be, and you think Hunter Yurecek could put that together.
Wichita State, even though it's not exactly the biggest draw, but you get to play
a
high-level coach and Greg Marshall, and it's close enough of a drive where people would go down there.
4 hours from Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, you have a few places to where you could make it work, and you could make a benefit in it for not only the fans for both programs, but also staying within the region and staying it for recruiting purposes. Because I'm telling you, if it was Arkansas and Wichita State or somebody like that, that would be a television event that people would be interested in.
I know they're in transition at Nebraska, but Nebraska's
Fred Hoiberg
semi-regional.
Yeah, so. Especially if Hoiberg can get it going there. So, I mean, there's a bunch of schools that are in the area.
Another one, and there's some Arkansas ties there, but I think would probably be glad to come here and play in. It might be part, I think they're in the AAC, is Southern Miss. And you got Doc Sadler coaching there. I think he's still there. So that would be another one that, Hattiesburg, Mississippi's not exactly close, and I don't think Arkansas is going to Hattiesburg, but that would be an interesting non-conference opponent to put on the home schedule.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few places like that.
You better have some of the quote-unquote mid-majors, which I think is a farce of a term anymore in college basketball and college baseball to some degree. So there's got to be some balance. You can't schedule all of those kind of teams either. Or you're going to schedule your way right out of a job when you're winning 15, 16 games.
Do you think that they could ever permanently have a rotation home and home, whatever, between Arkansas and Texas in basketball?
Oh, probably. But it doesn't have the same luster. I mean, they started the season with it this year, and I know it was in El Paso, but we're fans clamoring because it was Arkansas and Texas. It would need to be home and home. It'd have to be at Bud Walton Arena.
But if you did that, I think that'd be something Texas could agree to, and I think something that Arkansas could agree to. And more often than not, those two teams are going to be programs that are going to be really good.
I know this. It gets the over 50 crowd excited when you play Texas. I think fans of y'all's age just don't have the same...
Yeah, it's not to the same level, but it's still there because it's Texas. It's a big name.
The younger the fan base, the less you care about Arkansas playing Texas. Well,
and I agree because, again, you know, that, back in the Southwest Conference days, that was it. That was the team that you hated and despised the most. And when you got out of that conference and you stopped playing them, at least on a regular basis, it kind of went away. But that's just a name draw team that I feel like is being the biggest school in Texas and being the Longhorns. There would still be a lot of drive to a game like that. Because if you have it home and a home, and if it ends up building into something, because, you know, we've always talked about what's Arkansas's rivalry, and you know, yada, 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 about who, what is it, Missouri, whoever. No, that doesn't need to be fake. But if you, by playing a team every year, that may not be in your conference, but may have some great matchups, some great heat, programs of prestige, maybe, just maybe, it could be a team like Texas. Because you know you're not going to get them in football. I don't even know if you can get them in baseball, though they've played in baseball fairly often. They played them this year. In baseball and looked really good in game one. So, you know, it could happen, but that's just another idea of throwing it out there, saying, hey, maybe this is an opponent you can
well,
go with
and
as well.
Like with Colorado State, we saw that where that when the Jeff Long administration made that deal, that was not just a deal for a football game that they needed.
Basketball.
They
too.
Included some basketball in there. I think you're seeing more and more of that kind of scheduling go on. Hey, we need... Not just games in this sport, but how about we make a deal for a multiple sport arrangement here?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Do they play Colorado State this year in basketball? Or I guess they already taken care of their home and home again. Yeah. So I think they played them 2 years ago. So that's probably over. But yeah I think
but it was all part of the same.
Right. It's a package deal.
Package deal
type of thing with sports. So, but hopefully they're able to schedule some good teams. I like how the challenges and the conferences are going. I mean, the Big 12, SEC Big 12 Challenge, I think, is really fascinating, and you're always going to be guaranteed to play a decent team there.
And it doesn't happen in December when no one cares or no one's watching or it doesn't get in the wash of ball.
Right.
It happens in late January where everybody's paying attention.
Yeah, and that's exactly where it needs to be, and it needs to stay there.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.